Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
3 weeks till the election day, the status of voting in America. And today on the show, the latest from the Communication Workers of America, the iron workers on job safety and what they're doing to get more women working in the trades. Good afternoon and welcome to the Tuesday, October 13th edition of America's Workforce. And don't forget, we're available on various platforms, and that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and you can follow us there, AWF Union Podcast. We have three guests on the show today. We'll kick things off in a few minutes with Frank Matthews, District 4 Administrative Director for the Communication Workers of America. District 4 is pretty much a big chunk of the Midwest, Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, and so on. Today we're going to talk about worker safety, job cuts at AT&T. They've been struggling with AT&T for years. Again, this is a company that took a whole lot of money in tax cuts, promising if they got the tax cuts, we're going back to 2017, that they would create, what was it, 7,000 jobs for every $1 billion in tax cuts. Well, instead, they decided to cut jobs. They got tax cuts and they cut jobs, and they're cutting more jobs in the pandemic. That's what Frank is going to specifically get into. By the way, the CWA has come out in opposition to Judge Amy Coney Barrett's nomination to fill the seat of the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. In a statement released last week, President Chris Sheldon said, "With each appointment to the Supreme Court, Donald Trump has selected judges that have a track record of ignoring the concerns of working people in favor of giving more power and control over our lives to corporations." No surprise there. Many unions have lined up against this nomination. Vicki O'Leary will be joining us as her second guest on the show, and she comes to us from the Iron Workers, 30 years in the Iron Workers Union, and is now the International Union's General Organizer for Diversity. She started in Chicago in 1985 at the age of 21. After being offered a job by a Chicago apprenticeship coordinator, then she embarked on a 20-year construction trade career, working on projects from O'Hare International Airport to the McCormick Place Convention Center. Big projects, big projects. She also earned degrees in labor studies and operational leadership and picked to be the International Union's new General Organizer for Safety and Diversity, enabling rollout of a program called Be That One Guy to Fight Job Site Sexual and Other Harassment That Threatens Safety and Productivity. We're going to talk about the event of the year here for the trades, and it's this Saturday. We're talking about the Tradeswomen Builds Nations Conference. Usually a 3-day event, but because of the pandemic, it's going to be virtual this Saturday, October 17th. And from what I understand, you can register right up to the start of that conference, and she'll get into all the details. And then Wayne Cressup, who's been on the show before, also on behalf of the iron workers, he's in charge of safety. He's going to touch on that conference and get more specific on the safety protocol, especially in the middle of a pandemic. So jam-packed show right here on America's Workforce. Well, hard to believe, 21 days till we elect a president, whether it's re-electing Donald J. Trump or Joe Biden. And this is courtesy of In These Times magazine. They did voter suppression by the numbers, and you hear this all over America. But this is just a brief rundown. Did you know that 49%, so almost half of voters, expect to have difficulty casting their ballots this time, this year, compared to 15% during the 2018 midterms? 39% of voters So what's that? 2 out of 5 would prefer to vote by mail. And you're seeing a lot of that happening right now. How about this figure? 92 million eligible Americans did not vote 4 years ago. That's a shame. 92 million. 17 million people nationwide were kicked off voter registration lists. This is in the last 4 years, from 2016 actually to 2018, a 2 year period. 17 million kicked off to ensure accuracy. However, more people of color were kicked off the rolls. 11% of U.S. adults lack proper voting identification as required in 36 states. 15% of black voters reported trouble finding a polling station in 2016 compared to 5% of white voters. 29% of the people reported longer wait times to vote, experienced mostly in black communities than white communities. And last figure here, 2.7 million Americans, 2.7 million cited busy schedules as the number one reason they did not vote 4 years ago. You've heard this many times. This is the most important election ever, and I really think it is. I just hope you're not too busy to vote. And you think about that figure, 92 million eligible, keyword eligible Americans did not vote 4 years ago. Boy, that's got to change. That's really got to change. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce, our segment with the Communication Workers of America, coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a 500,000 strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. And don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. And when you get a chance, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis. And eventually give us a rating. We would appreciate a 5-star rating. Right now, let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, also a proud sponsor of America's Workforce. I'm talking about the Communication Workers of America. CWA-union.org is their website. And Frank Matthews is the District 4 Administrative Director, which covers a big chunk of the Midwest. Hey, Frank, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
No problem. Good afternoon. Glad to be on.
In this the new normal that we're living in. All right, let's talk about job safety. And also, I guess, you and I have had many conversations over the years about AT&T. Again, a company that advocated for the GOP tax cuts several years back and pretty much coming out saying if they got the tax cuts, they were going to create all kind of jobs. And I think the total should have been about 140,000, 150,000 jobs. Far from it. Why don't you pick it up from there? What's going on with AT&T now, Frank?
Well, it's getting, dozens of elected officials back at the end of September, I think September 23rd to be exact, dozens. I mean, and if you can go to our website and just look at the the phenomenal amount of local officials and members of Congress and state senators and mayors and township trustees that basically sent letters to AT&T, basically asking them to suspend job cuts and offshoring in order to support American workers here during the recovery of this COVID pandemic. The initial request on it was from a group of U.S. senators led by our very own Sherrod Brown and here from Ohio and Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin, demanding answers from AT&T about projected cuts. You know, as you expertly highlighted there, AT&T, you know, Trump's corporate tax cut, which was supposed to trickle down, and we all know you don't build from the top down, you build from the middle up, the middle class. But AT&T lobbied the CEO at the time, Randall Stephenson, basically saying that every $1 billion in tax cut meant 7,000 new jobs. Well, they received $21 billion. Okay, and your number was dead on, 140,000. Well, instead of creating that many jobs, AT&T has actually eliminated over 40,000 jobs, including more than 3,500 right here in Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Indiana. So they not only, you know, did not create the jobs, they've kind of aggressively been eliminating jobs. And, you know, in these letters to the new AT&T CEO, John Stankey, we had a list of heavy hitters. You know, a lot of times the local leaders in these cases mean just as much. And I just, you know, I highlighted Sherrod Brown, I highlighted Tammy Baldwin. You know, in Michigan, Rashida Tlaib and Andy Levin, members of Congress there, sent letters. In Wisconsin, Chris Larson, and just the across it, you know, Indiana State Senator Frank Mervin and David Nagotsky sent letters. It's a pretty incredible list, and you know, I would love to sit here and read it because you know the names even here in Ohio were big. That besides, you know, Sherrod, we had Ohio State Representative Amelia Sykes, our great friend Michael Skindell, and our great friend Tom Patton that signed it, in addition to many other mayors, council members. So you can go to our website, look this story up, and see the incredible list of leaders across the country, you know, or across the four states that basically said, you know, come on, AT&T, enough's enough. You know, we need these good jobs during this pandemic. We need them any time, but particularly during this pandemic. And it was nice to have their support, but also it's a very sad reality that, you know, that corporate America had no qualms taking the Trump tax cut. It didn't go into the pockets of our members, of our employees, of, you know, henceforth, when money like that, when corporations actually invest in their employees and invest in jobs, invest in their communities, sure, that money goes to our members and our members' families, but also that money goes out to the hardware store then from there. It's used to pay bills. It's used to buy groceries from the local grocer. It's used to buy gas. And these companies, unfortunately, decided to take all that money, and they're using it for CEO bonuses, stock buybacks, which, you know, number 45 wants to brag about how the stock market is supposedly doing so well. This stock market is being propped up by stock buybacks, basically, and we all know that stock buybacks do nothing for those. The only thing it does anybody for is the CEOs and those that are holding hundreds of thousands of shares of that stock. And, you know, it's not a very good indicator. Anytime you hear a politician say, well, you know, we must be doing great, the market's doing great, I say, no, you look at the average family out here and see how they're doing, you know, the ones that aren't holding the stock, and I'll tell you how America's doing. So it's pretty sad. You know, I know you've been spot on this story for a long time, but it was really, really nice to have the support of all these leaders, and it's well appreciated.
You're talking about the two economies in the world today. You got the big boys on Wall Street, as you indicated, with all the stock money, and then Main Street, and there's no comparison at all. I heard in your conversation that there's a new guy at the top at AT&T. So Randall Stephenson, I know he was the one we were beating up, and I know he must have walked away with literally millions of dollars. So when did this come down, Frank?
This was about a month and a half, 2 months ago, and he decided to ride off into the sunset with a incredible retirement, a incredible pension. And I wish I had the exact amounts. I don't know, but it would make all of our jaws hit the floor and go, wow. You know, I mean, it goes back to the argument also. And I know we've hit on this before, Flash, that, you know, 40 years ago, the average CEO in this country made about 25 to 40 times what the average employee makes. So, you know, to put that into perspective, you know, if the average employee in the 70s and 80s made about $25,000, uh-huh, you know the average CEO was only going to make probably 25 times that, you know, which you know, you're talking, what are we talking, maybe $500,000 to $700,000, maybe $1 million at max if you had a CEO. Now these CEOs, it's not common for a CEO to make $40 to $100 million a year, receive unbelievable amounts of stock futures and shares of stock as pay, and these golden parachutes. And it's what really drives me nuts is when you see these companies that file for bankruptcy and go under, but on the way out, the CEOs are the first at the trough to take their huge bonuses, even though they drove a company into the ground. So, you know, that's a whole nother story for another day. But I mean, it just goes to show the inequities. You know, and we've talked about it over the years, up until about 1970, productivity, as companies produce more, employees received higher wages. As productivity went up, employee salary and CEO pay went up. Well, somewhere around 1970, the CEOs figured, you know what? We can drive productivity and we can drive our salaries, but we'll just flatline salaries and wages. And I think, you know, it's hopefully we can get this thing turned around. I know, there's a PRO Act in place, which is going to help labor organize, and hopefully with a new administration next year and a new Senate and a new Congress, we can get a PRO Act passed that'll reunionize this country and make working folks a priority again. But I know we went from AT&T and the tax cuts and to the PRO Act, but elections matter, and all this stuff is tied together.
Oh, yeah. And Biden is a big supporter of the PRO Act. Speaking of which, Election Day, 21 days away, I can only imagine that your union has been very much charged up to get the vote out. Can you give us any details on that, Frank?
Yeah, we actually are encouraging our members to make a plan to vote from home. If you can't vote from home, vote early in person. Because honestly, we believe Election Day, why deal with that? It could be a mess. You know, you hear all the horror stories. I have confidence in you know, our boards to get what needs to be done. However, if folks wait to vote till Election Day, it could be a zoo, and there could be long lines. I would recommend taking a chair and a snack, possibly. But, you know, it's just to be safe, but stay there and vote. Our members are are voting from home and voting in person early at unprecedented numbers. And I think our members get it, that, you know, with Joe Biden, labor will, you know, have a seat at the table. The Trump, you know, when we show to our members how the Trump NLRB, his appointed judges on the NLRB, who are usually union busters or attorneys for companies that want to bust, that thrive on, you know, make their are proud to bust unions. These are the folks that, you know, Trump has put on the NLRB, and the amount of cases that have been overturned by these folks since Trump's been in office, and the amount of worker rights that have been stripped from workers is unbelievable. And once our members see those, plus the fact that, you know, Joe Biden may, you know, and he may turn out to be the best president for working families and for working Americans. How dare I say, since possibly Truman, I don't know. I mean, the guy gets it. Working families will have a seat at any table he's at. And unlike what we have going on now, where, you know, it seems to be about millionaire CEOs and you know, those that support the president now, and all others be damned, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. Big difference there. All right, buddy, we're going to have to button it up there. Frank Matthews, on behalf of the Communication Workers of America, check them out online, CWA-union.org. You take care. Be safe. Next time we talk, we'll hope to have a new president, okay?
Hey, let's hope. Thanks.
Okay, buddy. Take care. All right, quick break. When we come back, Vicki O'Leary, on behalf of the iron workers, talking about women in the trades. That's next right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Wash your hands, avoid sick people, and touching your face. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. You can follow us on Twitter, AWF Union Podcast, and we're on Facebook, also AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two right now, and welcome to the show, Vicki O'Leary. Vicki comes from the iron workers. She's been an iron worker since the mid-80s. She'll talk about getting in the trades and about the big conference this week, the Tradeswomen Build Nations Conference, which is going to be a virtual conference this Saturday. Hey, Vicki, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us today. And I just want to let you know that we record the show Monday through Friday at Local 17 of the Iron Workers in Cleveland, Ohio. And I just want to say that Rich Jordan, the business manager, says hi. I guess you and him know each other from a number of conferences in years past. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Make sure you tell him hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Good guy. Thanks for joining us today. All right. Let's talk a little bit about your trade and how you got in. It's my understanding your dad was an iron worker. Let's start right there, because the whole the whole crux of the show today is to promote more women in the trades. And you've done, my gosh, you've really changed the culture of the industry. So let's talk about you getting involved. Let's start there. Go ahead.
Well, my dad was an iron worker. I was working in a law firm and came home from work and was trying to talk to my mom at the dinner table about something. And my brother, who was an apprentice iron worker, the two of them just kept interrupting. And my brother finally turns to me and says, "Look, you can't do what me and dad could do anyway, so just shut up." Well, game on. So there was always quite a bit of competition between my brother and I. And so I went through all the hoops that I needed to do by going and getting my transcripts from high school and all the other hoops, and eventually took the test and did better than my brother did on that test, by the way. And I went to work probably about 9 months later out in the field. Wasn't sure I was going to be able to do it, but to prove a point, that was how I got in, was to prove a point. And yeah, I think I've proven it well with an explanation point at the end at this point.
Talk to me about those early days. Was it a tough adjustment? I mean, it was the guy's kind of trade, and I'm sure there was a lot going on. How did you handle yourself back then?
It was weird always being the only one, the only female on jobs. But I was lucky. My first job, because there was a federal job in Chicago, and they needed women. So the local one where I'm from took in about 6 women. And I believe 5 of us were on that first job. So that really helped with the transition into this career. But after that, I don't know that I ever worked with another woman for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. You eventually moved up the ranks of the union. Let's talk about that. And you really are promoting the fact, and I want to get into this as part of our interview today, about getting more women, the Trades Women Build Nations Conference. Going up the union ladder, was that also a difficult thing for you as well?
Yeah, I applied for many of the jobs out of Local 1 that didn't require being elected, and never was successful there. But I did go on to, I got 3 bachelor's degrees. I started sending my stuff to the international about once a year. Didn't hear anything for a couple of years, so went on and did an OSHA 145-hour administrator course. Then I went on and got my master's degree. And Eric Dean called me out of the blue in January of 2016, and said he wanted to talk to me. Could I meet him? So I went and met him, and he handed me a proposal. So that was really exciting. And needless to say, I would have signed on the spot, but Mr. Dean was like, no, go read this first.
Yeah.
And I called my dad so excited and told him, and it was really incredible to be able to make my dad so proud after being in the trade for so long, but also being the first woman that went to work at the international. So he's got a lot of pride with me on that.
And what was your position at international back then?
When I first started, it was as a district rep. And after a couple of years, moved on advisor and now director of diversity.
Okay, good. I know the iron workers. What, aren't you the first union that got paid maternity leave for the members of the union? That was quite an accomplishment. Maybe we could just touch on that briefly.
Yeah, we had we were at Trades Women Build Nations actually in 2016, and one of our women members stood up and told her story about how she had had a miscarriage from staying in the rod patch one day too long. And Mr. Dean heard that, and on our way out, he said, "I feel like I've been sucker punched in the gut." It's like, he said, "I never even thought about the danger of working while you're pregnant. We've got to do something." So gave me the task of getting it done, and I'm happy to say within about 10 months, we rolled out our maternity leave in March of 2017. And so far, we've had about 50 women use the policy, and it's just going really well.
And what is the policy? What can you give us some specifics of it?
Sure. So it's 6 months of paid leave prior to giving birth and 6 to 8 weeks after giving birth, with a cap of up to $800 per week. And as long as you have insurance through your hall, then you're eligible for this policy.
That's great. That's wonderful. Now, the iron workers, the only members of the trades that have this, and I'm just wondering, have other trades expressed an interest in what you created for the iron workers?
So far, we are the only that have it nationwide. There are some pockets of different district councils for different trades or different areas, but I have a feeling we're going to see some big news coming soon from some other trades.
That's good.
I think it's coming.
There's a tease there. I like that. Okay, now, we've got the virtual conference this week for the Tradeswomen Build Nations Conference. Is this going to be on the table for discussion? Maybe we could get into some specifics and how the role that you're going to play this Saturday.
Yes, I am the chair of NAB2's Women's Committee that puts on this conference. So we've been working ever since we decided to go virtual. We've been working on this, and this is out of my wheelhouse because we normally put it on in an in-person fashion. So it's been a learning curve, but I think we've got some great speakers. Of course, we have Liz Schuler. We've got Sean McGarvey from NAB2 and several others. I think that people are going to want to tune in because I think that our lineup is pretty spectacular. And many of our trades are going to be having caucuses either the night before or an hour or two after the end of the conference. The ironworkers will be doing our caucus with General President Dean on that same day. And, You know, this is where our maternity policy was born from, so who knows what can happen.
Yeah, really. Good things come out of these conferences, no doubt. Talk to me a little bit about the change. And I've heard this. Gina Walsh, we had her on yesterday. You know, when you zig, you got to zag sometimes. And obviously the pandemic has just thrown a monkey wrench into all the planning. And this was going to be a 3-day conference. Instead, it's going to be, I don't know how many hours it's going to go. It's going to be this Saturday. But that had to be quite monumental for you to regroup and do this virtually. Can you give me some specifics on that, Vicki?
Yeah. So first, it's going to go from 11 Eastern time until 2:30. So it's pretty long, but not 3 days, certainly not 3 days. You can't sit in front of a computer for that long. So we're going to have one workshop, and we're really excited to announce that we're going to be launching our Lean-In Circles for Tradeswomen on this conference. It's our only workshop because we feel like it's important enough. But I'm sure you've heard of Sheryl Sandberg from Facebook, who is also the Lean In founder. We have partnered with them to bring out virtual circles to tradeswomen across the United States and Canada so that they have support. We have content already for 6 months worth of content, and we'll be pushing out another 6 months. So 1 year of meeting with tradeswomen every month, talking about issues that arise on the job or how to handle situations. We're really super excited about this.
I'm just wondering, Vicki, you know, with this pandemic, and, you know, we have ridiculous unemployment right now. So many jobs have disappeared. And, you know, many of those jobs are just not going to come back. This has to be a really good time, a great opportunity for women to get involved in the trades. And obviously, there's a lot of work out there. I would imagine that would be coming up this Saturday as well. What do you think?
I would certainly like to see a lot more women. I believe that North America's Building Trades Unions has, back at their convention a month or two ago, that they want to double the number of women in the next 5 years. So that's extremely exciting.
Yeah. It could happen. Well, Vicki, I'm going to let you go. I thank you so much for joining us here on America's Workforce. Looking forward to checking out this conference. I'll go on my computer, log in. Again, it's real easy. Just go to the NAB2 website, NABTU.org, and it's posted all over the homepage. Well, you take care, be safe, and keep in touch with us here, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Vicki O'Leary on behalf of the iron workers. We're going to continue talking to the iron workers. We'll take a quick break, and then Wayne Cressup will be talking about worker safety right here on America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. You can also check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and our Twitter handle. Follow us there, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to our live line and join Wayne Cressup on behalf of the Ironworkers, ironworkers.org. And as we have been promoting here in the last couple of weeks, this coming Saturday, October 17th, is the Tradeswomen Build Nation Conference. Lot of work going into this conference, and usually it's a three-day event. This time, because of the pandemic, it's virtual, and I understand they're signing up people right before the start of it this Saturday. So let's talk to Wayne about it. There's a couple of issues I want to get into, but hey, Wayne, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again here on America's Workforce.
Hi, Flash. Thank you for having me. Great to be a part of the show again, and really appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about the Tradeswomen Build Nation Conference. And it's going to be, just like you said, a virtual conference. The registration for this is on NABTU, the North America Building Trades Union website, at nabtu.org/TWBN for Tradeswomen Build Nations. And we've got a terrific person on our staff with the Ironworkers International, Vicki O'Leary. She's a general organizer for diversity with the International. In fact, she was recognized last year as Engineering News Records 2019 Award of Excellence winner. Terrific woman, and does a tremendous amount of work in promoting the growth and diversity in the construction industry for women. And I got to say, as far as some of the things that they talk about with their programs, one of the things that I think is of note for all of the listeners is that the wages, wages are a big concern, for all of us here as a working man and woman in the construction industry. And I think that's a value for being in the union construction trades, is that as a tradeswoman, doesn't matter. It's not gender specific. If you're a journeyman, you're a journeyman, apprentice, an apprentice, and you get paid the same based on the work that you do. So we talk about wage disparity in other types of industries, and we don't really have that as a union construction tradesperson or tradesperson in the industry. I think that's pretty neat, and hopefully people will take advantage of getting on board with the conference here, taking advantage of it virtually. And we look forward to having their participation. Another element that goes into this when we talk about that, obviously, is under the safety side. And I'm sure when you talk to Vicki, as she addresses some of these things, she'll talk about personal protective equipment when it comes into line for safety and women working in the industry. And there's a common terminology: don't just shrink it and pink it. And that is what we what a lot of times they'll tell their members. You know, when we talk to manufacturers, personal protective equipment manufacturers, don't shrink it and pink it. In other words, don't take something that's made for a man, put it down there to a smaller man size, make it pink, and then give it to a woman and expect a woman to be able to fit in it and wear it and use it accordingly. And I give them a lot of credit for bringing that to the forefront, because I know a lot of our manufacturers now are paying a lot more attention to this, to not just turn it to the color pink and call it for a woman, but to actually really take the time and understand the woman's needs and how that equipment fits, and that and to make sure that it fits properly. And that goes along, you know, because properly fitting personal protective equipment, you know, hey, it can be just as dangerous as not having any on at all, you know, when it comes to some of the hazards that we deal with. So if it's too large and cumbersome and it's going to cause someone to stumble or trip or get hung up or snagged on something, you know, then it creates a greater hazard for us in the workplace. So that's a big part of it. And it's also caught OSHA's attention, believe it or not. Federal OSHA is looking at this in the construction industry to actually change some of the language of their standards to not only ensure that an employer provides personal protective equipment, but more importantly, provides properly fitting personal protective equipment. And I think that's, again, as part of this initiative here with more of the tradeswomen build nations and this and the programs that they have coming out. And I know Vicki will talk more in depth about some of these things and a number of other things when you have her on the show.
So if you want to turn off women going into the trades, don't shrink it and pink it. I mean, that's probably the takeaway from this interview here today, Wayne.
Absolutely, absolutely. That was a big thing for me. I was like, be careful what you say and make sure that it's that you use the appropriate terminology. And I appreciate them bringing that to everyone's attention.
That's good. Yeah, yeah. You know, you're right about the equipment not fitting. I see a lot of people that aren't even wearing masks properly. And some of the masks, it depends on the size of your face, too. They're not covering. Your nose is supposed to be covered. And I see some people below their nose, right below their nostrils. I say, wait a minute. This is not the way it's supposed to be worn. But to your point on that, I'm glad you called attention to that. I want to move on to contractor pre-qualification. I mean, this is so important, and we're talking about future work here and bidding on that work. Where are we in that arena, Wayne?
So, yeah, Flash. So we're constantly working toward this. It's certainly a challenge for the construction industry. If you take a look at it from an owner's perspective, a lot of times contractors bidding work to work for that client, the owner doesn't know who they are from the next contractor in line. And so a lot of times what they'll do is they want to pre-qualify those contractors to make sure that they have all of the different safety and bonding and all the insurance that that they would need to be able to go in and work and execute a job at that owner's facility. And, you know, it's probably not that much different if you think about it. For example, with the Browns game coming up this weekend, again, being a Clevelander and rooting for our team in brown and orange, you know, you stop at the store and you pick up your favorite beverage. Do you think about how many people were hurt or possibly killed when they manufactured that beverage? Let's take it another step. How about, car or truck that you might be looking at buying? Do you care how many people were hurt or killed in the manufacture of that automobile or pickup truck? And so when they look at a contractor, that's very similar, you know, how a contractor's safety performance is gauged when they go to bid that type of work to work for an owner or client. So a little different scale, but again, as a consumer for one side, you think about an owner or client using a contractor and a consumer type of an economy and using them to perform that product or perform that service for them to be able to create their products. So they want to make sure that they have the best qualified employers, the best qualified contractors to do the work. And I think this is an opportunity for us in the union construction industry because, you know, one of the things that we're always, you know, charged against, right, is our wages. And yet we have a very highly skilled workforce that goes through various apprenticeship programs, not just with the iron workers, but with all the other trades. to earn a skill set and to be able to perform jobs safely and with a high level of quality and productivity. And I think that's what we need to help sell ourselves as an industry to our owners, is that we, you know, may not necessarily be the lowest price, but when it comes to the end of the job, that hopefully we get it done on time or even ahead of time within budget, because we were able to execute our work to a high quality manner, and also in a safe manner, and making sure that we hit our marks on safety as part of that overall performance on the job. And so we're trying to help work on educating our owner clients to recognize that. And so the part of that is the unintended consequence. When we talk about TRIR, and you know, you said as the safety stuff that goes into it, you know, we have all these different, you know, incident rates, a total recordable incident rate, and a days away from restricted or transferred rate, you know, those kinds of rates that OSHA puts out there, you know, that we have to, that we often get measured by. And, you know, unfortunately, it was never meant as a measuring stick. It was a way to basically gauge how we're performing from year to year with our own company and with other companies that are similar to us. But in the pre-qualification process, that has been taken to another degree, and different owner clients utilize those rates and basically measure the safety performance of all the contractors based on those incident rates. So, you know, a lot of it is also educating our owner clients so that they understand what they're working with when we try to perform work on those jobs. And another element of pre-qualification is the utilization of third-party software. And a lot of owner clients are utilizing this type of software out in the market to help try to pre-qualify contractors before they even show up or even really bid any work to that owner or client. And that works, you know, for the most part, it's a pretty good system. The challenge is that a lot of our contractors are smaller employers, so they're a small business, so they're constantly fighting to get their foot in the door for these different companies, and then to be challenged with having to utilize a third-party program such as a software program that they have to go in and submit documentation and put all the paperwork into place in an electronic format makes it very challenging for them. And so a lot of times they get discouraged and they don't even apply for a lot of these jobs that might be available and might be well within their skill set to be able to perform that work. And this is one of the things that we're working on with the iron workers, is trying to help better educate our contractors and help get them better tools in their toolbox to be able to help pre-qualify with a lot of these third-party software systems. So that's one of the other elements that we're looking at.
You know, it sounds to me in this conversation, there's a lot of data out there. I think we know that about everything today. There's tons of data. It's a matter of sifting through that data, gathering it, and then educating the right parts to the members. Is that the best way to look at this situation, Wayne?
Absolutely. And I think the key with this is taking that data and making sure that that we're looking at it and comparing it appropriately. You know, for example, one of the challenges that we run into is that iron workers, you know, typically iron working contractors typically tend to have a little bit higher incident rate than maybe the overall construction industry. And and using that data and getting our employers, our owner and clients to understand that, you know, make sure that you're comparing the rate for the iron workers and not just using that rate for the overall construction industry, because it's not exactly an apples to apples comparison. And then, like I said, you know, we want to make sure that we have, you know, with our wages, the package that we have put together for our trades, that skill set is brought in and put to its best use. And I think that's where the conversations to come in to the most responsible or the lowest responsible bidder or the best value contractor is key in understanding what that is. And that, you know, like the adage, you get what you pay for. And, you know, we want to make sure that we're helping to drive that to get jobs done on time, within budget, and no one hurt.
Amen, brother. All right, a couple minutes left here. Last time you and I had a conversation, we touched on OSHA. In fact, we touched on it more than a couple of minutes. I'm just wondering here, anything that you want to call attention to right now that maybe happened here in the recent 2-3 weeks?
Well, you know, thanks, Flash. You know, one of the things I wanted to point out to our listeners is that, you know, this is something that You had a somebody on that talked a little bit about the National Labor Relations Board a few weeks ago and some of the different challenges associated with the NLRB and actually having an open seat on the NLRB. And how that actually has parlayed into some challenges with OSHA because we have a little bit of a lack of leadership right now within the agency federally. And I'm not taking shots at the current administration necessarily, but I'd just like our listeners to understand a little bit about some of the other things that have happened over the last several years in Washington. So, for example, there's career staff within the agency, and there's also appointed positions. And when the current administration came into office, they appointed or nominated someone to fill as the Assistant Secretary of Labor for OSHA. And that individual basically had to go before the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee and was approved then to be brought up on the floor of the Senate and confirmed then as that next new head of OSHA. Well, that person went through that process not once, not twice, but three times they went through that process. And all of it because of, unfortunately, the politics of filling. If they were to bring this individual up, there was concern that they would want to, that the other side would want to get the NLRB and EEOC positions that were open filled as well. And therefore, that position has been left open. So what's happened is in the agency, we have been stuck with an interim or an acting director of the director, an acting assistant secretary of labor for OSHA, an interim. It's kind of like having a substitute teacher. Unfortunately, we've had it for the last three, almost 4 years. And they're just kind of treading water there. So you have career staff that are working their tails off, trying to do a great job. And we have leadership that is kind of not sure what next steps to follow. And it's caused, in the coronavirus pandemic, it has caused a lot of states to basically look at doing their own thing. And that's what's happened. In some states, like the state of Virginia, has created their own emergency temporary standard for coronavirus. And then other organizations that are out there are now starting to move forward and putting other move forward with other initiatives. So, for example, I serve on the American National Standards Institute A10 committee, which is an accredited standards committee for construction and demolition. And as part of that group, we were tasked with developing a technical report for pandemics in response to this coronavirus pandemic. So I am now the chair of an ANSI A10 technical report subgroup to basically develop a tech report to help the construction industry fight against future pandemics. So, you know, unfortunately, because of a lot of that lack of leadership that we're seeing federally within OSHA, relative to the coronavirus pandemic, it's kicked off a lot of other things where other people are kind of taking matters into their own hands and trying to do the best they can with what they have. So hopefully within the next year or two and working with my technical report subgroup, I'm looking forward to, you know, having a plan, hopefully that'll help the construction industry if and when we have another one of these pandemics come around. And we've got great people that are working on this, both in labor and in management, you know, from a number of different professional trade associations and also from a lot of the NAB2 affiliates that are actively participating on this work group. And I am grateful for their leadership and their dedication in helping to put something together to help benefit the industry as a whole.
Don't bring that pandemic up again. I mean, every 100 years is okay, all right? I don't want to go down that road,
Amen.
All right?
Exactly. I hope this is something that's put together and it sits on the shelf for a very, very long time.
All right, Wayne, I have to leave it on that note. Wayne Cressup, District Representative of the Safety Health Department on behalf of the Ironworkers. You can find out more at ironworkers.org. Always a pleasure having you on. You keep up the fight, my brother, okay?
Thank you, Flash. I really appreciate it. Stay healthy, stay safe.
Again, that was Wayne Cressup, District Representative on behalf of the Ironworkers, ironworkers.org. Wayne in charge of safety and health. Very important issue. Any time of year, especially now with the pandemic. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Liz Schuler from the AFL-CIO and the Cleveland Building Trades. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.